Hello and welcome to the Tip TV podcast, giving you a roundup of the key highlights from this week on Tip TV. Starting off, we have the Evening Standard talking about Citibank's heading off to Paris.
Let's talk to a firm favourite here at Tip TV. His name is Simon English. He's a senior city correspondent, even for the Evening Standard. Simon, welcome to the show. Let's talk about banking. Now, there's a big headline after the French elections. The president wants the bankers back in Paris. Reading the headlines, I see that they're talking about Paris to build seven new skyscrapers to tempt the bankers back after the UK leaves the euro. That's the size of 50 football pitches, for what it's worth. Paris, Frankfurt, Luxembourg, Dublin, all going after the British banker. What's your thoughts there?
I think that his ambitions may not be as great as he pretends. There's been a lot of talk from France about them wanting to lure the city. They mean a slice of it. They mean a small piece of it. And seven skyscrapers, however many people that is, it's not that many. So if they get 10,000 people, 20,000 people, and some business, that's great for them. And that's all that they want, I think. I think, truthfully, much beyond that, and they begin to worry about how they're going to regulate these people. They don't have the experience and the expertise to do it. And I've heard from very senior people in the city and at the Bank of England who say that that's privately what Frankfurt and Paris finance bosses say to them. He's like, yeah, we're going to try and nick some of it, but ultimately we want the regulatory risk to stay with you because we're not sure that we know how to manage these banks.
Right. Now, in terms of lifestyle in Paris, would you, if you were a banker, actually want to move over from Paris, from the greatest city in the world?
Well, I don't really see that you would. And the banking culture there is very different to how it is here, in that there's traditionally a very slow start to the day. It's very family unfriendly for a start. It also, I think it wouldn't suit most people here who want to get up at 5 and 6 in the morning and go for it. Over there, the culture is much different. No one does a stroke until lunchtime. Then they go out for lunch for 3 or 4 hours, and then they come back, and then they kick in, and they work really hard until 10 o'clock at night. A, that's no good for the supposedly family-friendly practices that the city wants to push. Also, I just don't think it's going to suit that many people here who just, as I say, they want to get up in the morning and get on with it. They don't want to wait until 6 o'clock at night before they kick in.
Well, the final comment on this, I read that Paris La Défense, a business district, after the Brexit vote, came up with a party line, tired of the fog, try the frogs.
Well, a few people will, but you know what the truth is, Moose, and I'm sorry to say this about your old profession in particular. There aren't that many city traders who are smart enough to learn French. So even if they go over, people, you and your mates, you'll be back within 2 months.
This is Malky's oil segment from this week.
There are one or two things which change that, and obviously the big thing is US production, with the rig count increasing all the time. The shale boys in the States are having it off, as they say, and producing more and more, which worries the market. But it shouldn't worry the market too much because, although you know, they are up at about 10 million barrels a day, they have limited scope to make much more. And certainly Saudi Arabia can take that into account. And so longer term, I'm pretty positive. In the short term, it really will spin around. You know, the 3 weeks before this meeting has meant that things can change on a daily basis. In the last 2 days, for example, we've had positive announcements from the Saudi oil minister and the Russian oil minister yesterday, both of whom said that, you know, they're going to roll over the quotas and possibly cut them as well.
But isn't it the case that $50, whether it's Brent or WTI, were basically in comfort zone? Nobody's happy, nobody's unhappy. You know the producers, the consumers, everybody's okay. If there's any Goldilocks level, this is possibly the one.
I think that's about right. I mean, at around 50, most of the OPEC people are happy. It's not very good for some of them, but it's better than nothing. And the one thing they realised at the previous meeting, when they were told about the cuts, was no, they don't want to cut production. But somebody actually got into their stupid heads that actually the situation is, if would you rather cut 10% and get $50 a barrel or have no cuts and have $30 a barrel? You know, it's a no-brainer, but some of them were going, well, let's see. As it is, they've worked it out, they've cut the price, cut their production, and they're making more money than they would have done if things had gone wrong. So as long as those sort of variables are worked out in the marketplace, they can take into account a bit more US crude, and the market will come to their rescue. You know, there's a massive differential in the oil market between perception and actual what's going to happen. You know, I'm probably slightly wrong at the moment. I've got $60 in for my half year, end of June Brent price. But it may, you know, I mean, the meeting is end of May, so, you know, I may still be high 50. So, you know, I'm not the sort of person who changes my forecast very much. I've got 70 in for the end of the year.
Let's get the views from Rabobank.
Right, I mean, it did seem like a couple of days ago even that it was a done deal that sterling would break through $1.30. Has there been any change in sentiment as far as you can see there at Rabobank?
Well, if we look at the 130 level, just above that, there's some quite significant technical levels. So, for instance, if we look at the monthly chart, we see a big level coming in just under that 1233 level. And then, of course, we've got the region around 134, 135 too. So some big resistance levels in view. Now, for my mind, I think if we were to break above that 130 level, and for that, I think we would need a hawkish surprise from the bank with the voting members, perhaps, today. I think that the market would be looking really to sell. Sterling has done fairly well this year. As I say, it's the best performing G10 currency. And I think the market, there has been a big covering in shorts. The market's still relatively short. But I think if we got to 133, I think a lot of people would be looking to sell into that.
And on the show on Friday, Mark Oswald.
OK, let's go on to the next slide, which is gold ETF is supplied by the Investors Intelligence. Potential higher low, RSI is turning up from oversold, favourable risk to reward ratio here for entry for the brave, I suppose, at this stage. Going on to the S&P 500, the co-report index taking a breather to the underside of 2400. Being a bit stuck around that level now. Hopefully it'll be third or fourth time lucky there. The 14-day RSI is comfortably positioned with plenty of room to allow a rally. Going on again, technical trade of the day, TIP-TV trade of the day, Henderson Group daily chart. Bullish break on chart, RSI well positioned, yes, just over 60. Buy the pullback to £2.35, objective £2.50. Stops below, presumably, £2.30. And broker recommendations, it's a very, very confident Barclays Capital, given that the share price of BT currently is £2.97 or something like that, and we've got all those job losses, etc. Lloyds Banking, Berenberg seem to be on a different planet to the rest of us with a sell and a 55 pence target just now that the distressed seller is out, HM government. And then Pearson Liberum ignoring the strategic review of educational publisher Pearson and coming up with a £3.60 target. I think the shares are around £7 at the moment, so they're not things are not, they're being a bit depressing, I think, there. And then finally, probably my favourite at the moment, Marks and Spencer's, just because Archie Norman is now chairman. The man can walk on water, obviously.
Apparently, yes.
Right, so just to finish off, we have a financial warning here for men who are rich and thinking of getting married, don't do it. And if you are married, don't get rich because you'll have to give half of it away. Or 40%, I think it's 40.7%. A judge orders Citi Trader to pay ex-wife $453 million. I think if I had to pay that much out, I might actually try and reconcile with the estranged party.
And finally, the views and comments from Investec.
Manuel Macron being elected. Is it the hype? Can he live up to the hype?
Well, it's difficult, I think, for any president to, as you say, live up to the hype. His next job now is to start campaigning for the National Assembly elections in June because the En Marche party is new. It doesn't have any existing momentum in the Assembly whatsoever. And so he's got to do two things. I think, number one, he's got to build his own momentum, which he would hope carries through into the Assembly elections. And secondly, he's got to start forging alliances, because unless En Marche manages to get a majority in absolute terms in the Assembly, he's going to want to have to avoid a formal period of cohabitation and build something which is more akin to a coalition or an alliance within the deputies.
Thank you very much for joining us on this weekly podcast. Check us out on tiptv.co.uk.